Around Comics, episode 59. Chicago, this is Around Comics, a roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the co-host of Around Comics, Brian Salazar.
Hello, hello.
And our other co-host and the straw that stirs the drink, Mr. Tom Caters.
I can read well.
If you can. Gentlemen, welcome aboard for another episode.
Hi, Chris.
Have you guys here? We're going to be talking with our guests
this
week.
Like he invited us to the
show. Welcome.
We're all sitting
around.
Hey, good to have you guys.
Hey, thanks for showing up, guys.
Every
thanks,
week
buddy.
It's a surprise when we walk in, and he's like, hey,
oh,
look,
I'm so glad I don't have to do it alone again.
Every week it's always possibly could happen. Sal, Tom, you're fired.
Well, everyone, thank you for tuning in to another Thursday edition of Around Comics. Our guest this week is going to be current Vertigo writer of The Other Side and another upcoming series called Scalped. He is Mr. Jason Aaron. We're going to be talking to Jason in just a couple moments. But first, I'd like to let you know that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by the New York Comic Con.
The New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd through 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City, featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video game, trading cards, RPG, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guests of honor include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and George Perez, with many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show and advance ticket information, visit www.nycomiccon.com. Don't miss out on the 2007 New York Comic Con. Snap! Look at how well I read
nice.
That, guys.
Wow, that was...
Would I apply myself?
Tom had like a vein coming out of his forehead.
Must read well, not lackadaisical.
Don't crack jokes.
Don't make fun.
We're almost going to have this New York Comic Con spot memorized by the time of the show.
The New York
MMOs.
And you're going to be checking out all the MMOs.
What the hell is an MMO?
That's those...
It's the online games, the
multiple...
Something.
Masturbator. Multiple masturbatory.
Okay. That, well, that explains it.
Anywho.
All right. Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. When you're here, please remember to ask Dark Tower about their Pull-List membership. It's one of the best you'll find anywhere. Dark Tower has a great selection of mainstream comics, indie comics, and trades, as well as statues and action figures, and a big row of new HeroClix cases also.
So. No one cares about it except you.
Sorry. Nerd. All right, come to Dark Tower for all your comics and collectibles needs.
And remember that your Around Comics experience isn't complete until you've read this week's Long Box of Love. Each Thursday episode of Around Comics has a wonderfully handcrafted webcomic from Brian Bowles. Check it out every Monday at Every Thursday. At www.aroundcomics.com.
That's the new format. It's still throwing me off,
Somebody
guys.
Somebody dropped the ball.
All right, scratch this. Right.
And after you check out the Long Box of Love, hang around the site and fill out our listener survey. It lets us know who we're talking to and how we can make Around Comics a better show. It only takes a few minutes.
It means more than we
do
can
it.
Say. All right. Guys, that'll wrap up our beginning announcements. Let's go ahead and talk with Jason Aaron.
Let's.
And Around Comics is pleased to welcome Jason Aaron. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Fantastic.
Good. It's cold.
It is chilly in Chicago. What's the weather like down in Kansas City?
It's cold, too. It's cold, too. Probably not as windy as it is there, but...
Oh, that's a misnomer. It's not
like
that windy here.
This is already an awkward weather conversation. It's windy.
Talk to this guy about the weather.
Yeah. Exactly. Talk about the weather for a while.
Well, Jason, we've been, all three of us on the panel have been fans of The Other Side since it came out. I think we were even looking forward to it quite a bit whenever it was previewed, and it has not disappointed to this point. Issue 3 came out this past week, and I tell you, let's go ahead and start off with where the idea for The Other Side came from. You can kind of walk us through the genesis of that project.
Well, my interest in the Vietnam War came from the fact that my cousin was Gustav Hasford, who was a Vietnam vet. He was a Marine combat correspondent in 67, 68. And after he came home, he wrote a book called The Short Timers, which was what Stanley Kubrick bought the rights to and turned into Full Metal Jacket. And Gus also collaborated on the screenplay for that with Kubrick and Michael Herr, and, you know, got an Oscar nomination for that. And wrote a couple of other books, one of which was a sequel to The Short Timers called The Phantom Looper. You know, he's obviously much older than me. I'm 33 today.
It's your birthday?
I only met him. I'm sorry?
It's your birthday?
No, not today.
Oh.
Just in general. I'm 33 today.
It's like, what a coincidence. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But, you know, I only met him in person maybe four times in my life. And kind of around the point in my life where I was getting interested in writing and would have really wanted to talk to him about those things, he had died. He died in 93. And unfortunately today, even for the last several years, all his books have been out of print, which there's a long, you know, complicated explanation as to why that is. It's not because of lack of interest. There are a lot of people who love his books and a lot more people who would love to read them just because of the film. But anyway, because of that, I started a website, I don't know, probably 10 years ago. Just compiled the little things I knew about him and put it online. And through that site, I just read in an article about him. I think in the LA Times it mentioned a friend of his, quoted a friend of his from Vietnam. So I and said that this guy was an editor at the time. So I just emailed him out of the blue, and his name's Bob Bayer. It turns out he's, like, literally the nicest fucking guy you could ever meet in your life. And through him, I've gotten to meet this whole group of Vietnam combat correspondents that my cousin was a part of. And I've been to a couple of their reunions. And so just hanging out with those guys and listening to their stories, you know, sitting up drinking with them until 3 in the morning, just being a fly on the wall, was fascinating, and that's, you know, just fueled my interest in the war. And the book that became The Other Side, I actually first pitched to Marvel because I got my first break with Marvel. I pitched it to them as a the relaunch of the Nom, and at one point it looked like it was going to be part of the whole, you know, Epic imprint, which obviously didn't work out. And you know, several years later, here I am at Vertigo.
Well, it's a very unflinching look at Vietnam for, you know, any listeners out there that haven't picked it up. It is a very, I don't want to say realistic, because there's, you know, some psychological and or, you know, almost supernatural aspect to it. But it is a very unflinching look at the war. And we were actually pre-show talking about the NAM and how when it was written, that it was probably the harshest look at the Vietnam War, and probably just for the time that it was written. And now The Other Side has kind of taken that to another level and pushed the envelope in that storytelling.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I'd also have to give credit to Don Lomax, who, you know, a lot of people didn't read his book, but it was actually coming out the exact same time as the NAM. It was called Vietnam Journal. It was published by a small company called Apple Comics, I believe. I think there are maybe 17 issues of the initial run, and they're just still some of the most brutal, gritty comics that you've ever read. And Don Lomax is a guy who was, you know, served in Vietnam. So I knew going in to do The Other Side that I could never, you know, obviously I wasn't there on the ground. I could never attempt to do, like, a straightforward view of the war from the grunt's perspective and come anywhere close to Vietnam Journal or even to the NAM, because Doug Murray was also a vet. So that's part of the reason that we, you know, that I had to put in these supernatural elements just to give it a different twist. Also, my cousin's book, The Short Timers, there was an early draft of that that included a lot of weird, surreal elements, like army officers who were vampires and soldiers that would turn into werewolves when they went into combat. So that was also an influence on the surreal elements that you see on the other side.
In a lot of, you know, war stories, especially based on Vietnam, you see a lot of that sort of different type of elements that are surreal or supernatural or psychological twists on the experience. Do you think that is in relation to that, you know, experience of being in that war is so sort of mind twisting that we see that come out in a lot of the stories? Or do you
think? Yeah, I think so. Because I don't think you didn't see stories like that about World War II. You know, the stories you saw that were surreal about that war were more over-the-top kind of creature commandos and airplanes fighting dinosaurs type stuff. But I think Vietnam is just something about the nature of that war just lends itself to the elements of a horror story. And that's basically how we approached the other side, is that it wasn't as much a horror story as it was a war story.
Well, one of the things that interests me most about the book is in reading it, I had picked it as my top of the stack, and I kind of set it cautionary because I said the book could kind of fail. Because when I first started reading it, I was like, oh, it's just kind of like Full Metal Jacket. But then once you introduce the supernatural parts, it's like, okay, now I'm starting to get it. What sort of pressures as being like a writer and trying to include these supernatural elements? Was it difficult for you to try and weigh trying to be realistic versus adding those elements? Was there any tension in trying to fit both of those together?
Oh, yeah, most definitely, because, you know, I mean, this is a story of the real setting. You know, I know real people who were actually there. So, yeah, I was very apprehensive about doing a story with zombies and talking maggots, and because I got to go present that to these guys, you know, face to face. And, you know, these vets I know, they don't hold anything back. They'll, you know, they'll rip your balls off and feed them till you're right there.
Issue 4.
Yeah.
Did you find a lot of resistance when you were trying to pitch this story? Not only the content of this particular story, but just it being about Vietnam.
Well, I think just not particularly Vietnam, but I think just war books in general. Nobody's interested in them because they don't sell. So yeah, I had a lot of resistance to pitching this book. I mean, it made the rounds, you know, before I finally got accepted at Vertigo. Which, you know, that's fucking great. It's like I failed upwards somehow.
You fell up the stairs somehow.
Yeah, I don't know how the hell I did that. But yeah, I think, you know, just war books in general people turn away from. And even Will Dennis, my editor at Vertigo, when I just emailed him out of the blue and said, hey, this is who I am and I want to do this war book, he's like, good luck to you, but no thanks, because war books don't sell. It just took me a little time to get him to see that, you know, this wasn't your typical war book.
I think there's also a really great thing about this book is that while it's about the Vietnam War, there's elements to the story that I think are true probably to anyone. There's every war has probably had people who didn't want to fight it or people who wanted to fight it but didn't really know what it was about. So it's sort of transcendent in that way, which I think maybe is why this book at this time's kind of been more successful for me as far as a book goes. It has sort of a transcendent quality to it.
Well, and, you know, probably before we move on too far, because, you know, once again, I don't know if everyone listening has had a chance to pick up the book, which, you know, we obviously highly suggest, but Jason, can you kind of give us the not the pitch, but a quick rundown of the concept of The Other Side? And why it's a little bit different than some of the other war books that have been out there?
Sure. Well, the main thing I liked about it, the idea is that it, you know, like you said, it looks at the war from two different perspectives, which we have seen, you know, you have seen at times before in war comics, but not too much. And so I like that in that you get the differing perspectives of, you know, you see that both sides are lied to, both sides are taken advantage of, and, you know, the kids down at the bottom actually doing the fighting, you know, you can't really confuse them with the policymakers and with these overall ideas of communism and domino theories and that type of stuff. So we follow one American Marine who's drafted from Alabama, farm boy. And we also follow a Vietnamese farm boy who enlists in the North Vietnamese Army. And you see their training in the first issue. And in the second issue, the American Marine makes it to Vietnam, and the NVA soldier begins the march south, which, you know, was a horror show that these soldiers had to walk through before they even got to the war.
And yeah, there,
of course,
there's,
you have...
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, there's the line in the last issue, you know, where the North Vietnamese guy is like, you know, go ahead and continue the march. You know, you're going to die before you even fire a bullet. And it really is.
Mm-hmm.
Their journey is, I mean, it's horrific what they're having
yeah.
to go through. And they haven't even seen an American, you know, troop yet. And it's...
Yeah. Well, I mean, that the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which was actually a series of trails through Vietnam, is literally the most heavily bombed area in human history. You know, we bombed the shit out of that area, but still could not stop the flow of men and machines down
it. Well, I thought it made for a really interesting, you know, display of the difference between sort of the training of those two soldiers. You know, the American soldier, you know, going to boot camp and going through that process, and then the Vietnamese soldier, you know, his sort of training with just, you know, traversing the countryside and having to go through those horrors, and how they, you know, sort of conflict with one another, but at the same time they almost represent the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's all, you know, indoctrination. It's just different ways of going about it. You know, you're just turning these people into, you know, not mindless killing machines, but people who will follow your orders without question, and who see their enemy as something less than they are, something less than human, because I guess you have to, in a sense, if you're going to treat them that way.
Obviously, the research that you did for the American side is, you know, it's obvious. You know, a family member who's written up, you know, an acclaimed book turned movie, and you know, talking about hanging out with other Vietnam veterans. But where did you research the Vietnamese viewpoint for the book? Because that's really half of the book.
Mm-hmm. Read a lot and also talked to these same guys. There's actually one of the vets I know who was an interpreter during the war, so he was a great asset. But there's a lot of great literature that has come from Vietnam about their side of the war. The Sorrow of the War, I think, is the most acclaimed novel. And then also a big asset, which was something I found through researching my cousin, and this was a resource that he used, was the writings of a British journalist, Wilfred Burkitt, who at the time was considered a communist sympathizer and maybe an agent of the KGB, because he actually traveled on the ground with the Viet Cong during the war, writing stories about what they were doing, about, you know, I mean, literally traveling on the ground with them as they were being bombed. Most of his books are out of print, but they're definitely worth the efforts if you can track down copies.
Did you know from the very beginning, when you first started writing this, that you wanted to tell it from both perspectives, or was that something that came about later on in the process?
No, that was in the very first pitch I ever sent in of it, which was probably 2002, because I wasn't interested in, like I said, doing a straightforward on-the-ground war story from just the American grunt's perspective, because that's been done so well before. And, you know, I'd like to say that it was in some way, you know, my statement on the Iraq war, but I mean, I started writing it before there even was a war in Iraq, but I think just the idea of looking at any type of conflict like that and trying to say, you know, okay, well, how does it look from the perspective of the person on the ground on the other side? You know, I think it's always helpful to try to look at that in any situation and see that, you know, things aren't always so black and white as we might think they are.
I have to say that Cameron Stewart art has been really amazing, too, in really capturing sort of, it feels like each issue gets darker and darker artistically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just seems like thing. If you just look at the backgrounds, as it gets worse and worse, and you see, like,
it's grim.
Dragging a human arm, and, you know, like, it just keeps getting darker and darker.
A little nod to the Gunner and Sarge. Isn't that the old DC character with the guy with the dog?
Yes.
Okay, that was our Gunner and Sarge moment.
Oh, wow.
Dragging a severed arm.
Well, I do have to say I enjoyed in the second issue the guy reading old comic books Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a nice little touch. That was sort of
What you have to clarify this for us. Now, John Hook, who a friend of yours, he's
full of shit. Don't believe anything John Hook.
he told us that you put him in the book.
Well, yeah, but
he's Vietnamese.
I wrote it like a long, character notes for all these characters, all the American soldiers that you see in the book. So they're all named after, guys who shop at this one store in Kansas City, Elite Comics. So, everybody doesn't get their name spoken, and I wasn't going to make Cameron draw little fucking name tags on guys. But all those guys you see in the background, like sitting around, they all have names.
That's cool. That's nice. Mm-hmm.
The character in issue two who gets shot, the guy reading the comics, his name is Bindrup in the book, and that's William Bindrup is the owner of Elite Comics. So.
Oh, there you go.
That's fun to do that kind of stuff.
Kill your shop owner.
I actually bought that second page and hung it on the wall of the store.
Nice.
Well, speaking about Cameron, I had read somewhere that he actually traveled to Vietnam to do research for the book.
He did, which was weird for me. I mean, I met him for the first time in person in San Diego, 2005. And he left from there to fly to Vietnam for, I think, 2 weeks. He just traveled the country, went, to North Vietnam and South Vietnam, and I think went over into Cambodia, too.
Wow.
Taking pictures and sketching and had no plans. Like, there's no tour. He wasn't set up with a tour guide or anything. He had a hotel reservation for the night he got there, and then he just kind of was on his own, which was scary for me. I mean, I've just been a guy who's been sitting in my fucking living room at my desk typing the story out for a couple of years, and now I meet this guy who's literally gotten shots and inoculations and got his passport and he's going to Vietnam.
Parachuting in.
Like, if this guy gets fucking bit by a snake or something and dies, I'm going to feel like shit.
Where his last
comic book.
Where his last words before he got on the plane, the final draft of that script better not suck.
Yeah.
Well, that's some pretty serious dedication, to his craft. My goodness, that's pretty amazing to imagine him wanting to do that just for the realism. And it shows in the book, certainly.
Oh yeah. There are scenes and backgrounds that are from reference he did while in Vietnam, and some of the characters are based on people he met while he was there. So yeah, from the get-go, I was just blown away by his level of commitment to the book. And he said he wanted to bring something personal to the story, since I had a personal connection to the war, and he's Canadian. He felt like he needed to do that. Even, when Kerry Berger at Vertigo first suggested Cameron, he wasn't what anybody had in mind. Even Cameron himself didn't think he was right for the book. But, it shows what I fucking know and why Kerry Berger has been head of Vertigo for so long, because he was obviously the perfect choice, and I think he knew that as soon as he saw how dedicated he was to the book, to the project from the get-go.
Well, I think it's a pretty obvious marriage of the two of you in the book, that your writing, his art, complements the story very well. And one of the things that Tom, going back to the first time that we had reviewed the book, what impressed Tom about it was your use of the sequential medium to have, insects and animals and inanimate objects talking to these characters.
Oh, okay. Say that. Now I remember.
Yeah. So I remember what you say, Tom. But really wanted to compliment you on understanding and using the sequential medium so well.
Well, thank you. I mean, I always wanted to write it as a comic. I was never interested in writing some thinly veiled version of a screenplay. Hollywood's a nice place to visit, but I would never want to work there. I love comics, and that's where I hope I can continue to work.
Well, Chris also said he enjoyed it, too, since we're all passing on messages.
As I'm quoting Tom.
All right, I'm sitting answering you.
Jason, earlier this week I was on...
Sorry, not to interrupt you real quick before we move on. I also want to give credit to Dave McKeag, whose colors, I think, on the book are just incredible.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, sure. Certainly, we should.
The colors on that book are just fucking gorgeous. I don't think... I think he's doing some of the best work on the shelf today, and that's all him. That's all Dave McKeag.
The poor forgotten colorist. We always forget the poor colorist.
Oh, it's just beautiful work.
Yeah, the offensive lineman of comics.
I was on the website you had created about your cousin earlier, and reading some of the stories about his you know, work with the film and some of the crazy stuff that happened there. Going back to, you know, your comments about Hollywood, did any of that sort of influence your attitude towards, you know, wanting to stay with comics, or did it have any influence at all in just selling your writing?
I don't know. I never really thought of it that way. I mean, my cousin had a lot of crazy experiences, but he was a rather eccentric guy to begin with. You know, you're talking about a guy who got the greatest fine ever levied in the history of libraries. You know, he spent 6 months in jail for stealing library books.
Wow.
Like 700 library books from libraries across the country, which he liked to say weren't stolen, they were just really overdue.
Not stealing?
But the judge didn't see it that way, and he spent 6 months in jail.
Wow.
You know, had a long protracted clash with Stanley Kubrick, you know, and lived a very eccentric life. When he died, he was living in Greece, the guy who traveled the world. So I don't know that that had an influence on me, like not wanting to be involved in Hollywood. It's just, I've always been a comic fan and somehow, you know, found myself actually writing them and just loving every second of it. And I have no desire to do anything else right now.
How many overdue books do you have?
None that I'm going to tell anybody about.
What are you in prison for? Library books, overdue.
It's like the San Luis Obispo County Jail, so I doubt, you know, I don't think that's where they keep Manson. I don't think there are a lot of hardcore bangers in San Luis Obispo County Jail.
Other overdue book people.
Now, how many issues is The Other Side going to run?
It's five.
Okay, it's five issues, so we're three-fifths of the way through. And is there already plans to go to a trade with it?
I believe so. They haven't put it on their schedule yet, I don't believe. But, yes, I've been told that there is.
Fantastic.
Which I think they were, you know, dedicated to from the get-go, because this does seem like something that would have some crossover appeal.
Sure.
Hopefully, you know, the people who don't normally read comics.
Hey, one of the other things I want to ask you, I was reading an interview you had done, I don't remember where it was at, but you had mentioned how, you know, getting to know the men that served with your cousin and how they had influenced you so much, and one of the things you really wanted to do was show them the first issue when it came out, and I was just wondering, were you able to do that, and if so, what was their reaction?
They just had their newest reunion last month, and I was not able to go. I'm a stay-at-home dad, in addition to a comic writer, so that takes up a large part of my time. But I sent a big box of the books down there, too, and I've gotten some comments that have trickled in so far, and most of them have been great. You know, you have to understand, you're talking about a group of guys, so weird when you meet them is that they literally have nothing in common except for those few months that they spent together in Vietnam back in the 60s. You know, you're talking about guys like from the far left politically and from the far right. So it's hard to get them to agree on anything.
Yeah.
And they're a very opinionated group of guys. So, you know, yeah, some of them have issues and they'll point out like, well, this is the totally wrong type of helicopter. What are you thinking? You know, hopefully we got the book right. The book feels true in like some sort of loftier, you know, pretentious sounding sense, even though we missed little things like that because we did our best. But
the zombies are fine.
Yes, the zombies are historically accurate.
Nice. Well, when you're doing, you know, such serious subject matter, you want to do it right, and it feels like it's, I mean, it's definitely serious, and you know, it has that feel to it, and you know, from our, you know, very much layman perspective, it feels right from our end.
Hi, this is Greg Rucka, and we're all around comics.
Before we forget, want to talk about an upcoming series that you have planned. I believe it is in the January previews for
yes.
Your new series, Scalped, with Jacques.
Well, Jacques does the covers, but okay. The interior art is by the European artist R.M. Guerra.
And I'm obviously unprepared to ask you about this.
Sculpt. So it's a book.
Gareth's pretty unknown. He's unknown in the States, so don't feel bad. You know, okay. He's done a lot of work in Spain and in France, but I think this is his first big book in the States.
What is Sculpt going to be about?
Well, Sculpt is a crime drama / urban western that's set on a modern-day Indian reservation. Focuses on organized crime revolving around this newly opened casino on the res. It's sort of like The Wire meets Cormac McCarthy with some Elmore Leonard westerns and Peckinpah and like a little Bruce Lee thrown in. So.
I think Sal just got excited.
Sounds like
what?
and a lot of nudity. There's a lot of nudity.
Nice.
Curse words for the kids because that's what the kids like.
The kids want to buy books with nudity and swearing.
That's right.
No, I did. What made you want to write about this sort of concept? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, a crime drama, but set in the setting that you're putting it in, it seems like an interesting perspective. But what brought you to that story?
Just another one of those long-running obsessions I've had, just like the Vietnam War. Native American history and culture has been another one of those things that has fascinated me for a long time. And, you know, just like I haven't been to Vietnam, I'm not a Native American. So I'm, you know, taking a risk and then I'm venturing into something that some people may tell me I have no business writing about. But the crime angle just seemed to fit perfectly because you haven't really seen people tackle that yet. You know, Indian gaming has become such a huge thing in the last decade. You know, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry now in the United States. And you hear some vague reports about how organized crime is starting to get involved in that, which a lot of people deny. So it seemed like something that was fresh, a fresh setting and fresh idea for a crime story. It actually started out as it was going to be a Vertigo relaunch of the old DC character Scalp Hunter. Remember from Weird Western Tales.
It kind of disappoints me because I had an idea a couple years ago for a movie that would be a parody of Ocean's 11, but they'd be robbing an Indian casino. Because I remember when I was a kid, because I grew up in Green Bay, and there's a huge Indian casino nearby. And when we were 18, mm-hmm. that was like the place to go because it was the one like sort of evil thing you could do at 18. You know, it was like gamble. So
or vote. You could vote. That's
no. Keep your political opinions. Sorry. Stop voting.
Well, anyway,
don't let me stop you from doing your idea. By all means.
No, God damn it! It's happened with Superman.
Although we are doing that exact same story in the next story arc. Now we are.
Scribbling notes.
I know one of the things that you've done with this book that you don't see in a lot of times in these types of stories is that the cast is almost completely Native American. You're not using a half white, half Native American hero or even a white hero or something, you know, that you see in a lot of stories that are centered around that culture. I know that was something that was sort of important to you, and could you speak to that, you know, and why you wanted to make sure that was the way it was?
Yeah, I just think that's a typical Hollywood cop-out, and that you have somebody who sits down and says, hey, let's cowboy Indians are cool. Let's do a movie about Indians set among Indians, but let's make the main guy a fucking white guy. Like, hey, our samurais are cool. Let's do a movie called The Last Samurai, and let's get Tom Cruise to play the lead. Like, you know, that always seemed like a Hollywood cop-out. And I was very committed from the get-go. If we're going to do a book set on an Indian reservation, then shouldn't the cast mostly be Indians? So, yeah, the main characters are almost exclusively Native Americans. You know, we do have a few white guys poking in here and there, but, that was very important.
And the story is basically it's about a character who's coming back to the reservation after being gone for a while and sort of denying his heritage and he's a police officer, is that correct?
Well, yes. Dash Bad Horse is his name. He's been gone for 15 years and he's a guy who's always rejected his native culture and has never been interested in considering himself a Lakota and is kind of forced to come back to the reservation for reasons you'll see in the first issue, and winds up hooking up with the local tribal leader who's also a burgeoning crime boss, and through him winds up becoming a tribal cop. So there's some secrets along the way which I won't spoil, but that's the basic gist of it.
With both The Other Side and Scalped, it seems like, you know, the perspective we're seeing both these stories from are with characters that in a lot of history we haven't really seen sympathy for. A lot of the Vietnamese characters and American Indians are obviously characters that have been oppressed and victims of American aggression in history. Have you ever, did you ever have any experience with this so far as people thinking maybe, I don't know, you know, your work is un-American in some way, or have you had any sort of, you know, retaliation in any way because of it?
No, not that I know of.
Okay, you just gave people ideas.
Sorry, I didn't. Someone's like, wait a second. It's not my opinion. I was just wondering if, you know, because the reason I ask is because when I'm reading The Other Side and then I heard about Scalp, you know, I was just kind of thinking, it's like, wow, you know, we really wouldn't see these stories, say, 25 years ago or 20 years ago. You know what I mean? You wouldn't be able to tell these stories in the way you're doing it and not get a lot of feedback, negative feedback from it. So I was just wondering if you had seen any at all, and it sounds like not. So that I think that's good, but
I didn't really come into these books like with an agenda in mind or anything. I think it just kind of worked out, and just these were the stories and the characters I was interested in using. There was no grand plan.
He's not sitting there twirling his mustache.
let's move on to a couple forum questions here. The first one is from David D. And he has two questions, one about Scalped and one about The Other Side. The first one is, Scalped, what, if any, influence has author Sherman Alexie's stories about Rez life had on your work?
I have some of those books on my Amazon wish list if somebody's looking to get me a Christmas present. But no, I haven't read it yet. But, I mean, Ian Fraser's On the Rez was a big influence. Keeping Time on Pine Ridge. Trying to look at my bookshelf to remember stuff like In the Spirit of Crazy Horse. I've done the research, hopefully.
Well, I guess if people want an answer to that question, they should buy that for you for Christmas.
Yes, they should send it to you.
Then you can tell them in hindsight.
His second question is, on the other side, could this premise of the split narrative and the inevitable collision of these two men have worked over a much longer arc, or do you feel that the premise was much better suited to a miniseries?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I could have drug it out for too long without it seeming padded. Eventually you have to put those two characters in the same location. And, I don't want to talk too much about what happens at the end, but, I feel really comfortable with the length of the storyline that we have.
Well, from the beginning of the series, you know that these two are going to end up, you know, at least in close proximity to each other.
Hugging.
Yes.
Last panel is a hug. I doubt that. I don't think that's how this book's going to
just wrap it up in a nice, happy...
And the five or six issues seems like the right amount of time.
They meet for a beer and a cigarette.
I'm like, man, that was crazy. Get all the way here, huh? Yeah.
That's the bummer about the book is that I'm loving the story, and I'm just like, these characters are not going to make this out of here alive. you almost feel that like they're doomed from the beginning, but it's a car crash that you can't turn away from. How I feel about it.
Next question is
read John Hook's question.
John Hook has a question. Oh God. With the success of The Other Side and Scalped coming out as a ongoing monthly title, and them both being Vertigo books. My question is this. Do you have to butter both ears to get that hugely deformed melon of yours through a door, or do you just do the forehead?
Of course, that's Hook's question.
Can I suggest an answer?
Sure.
Fuck you, John.
Yeah, John is not in a position to ask anybody about being able to fit through doors.
Snap.
Well, he did have to say, and for anyone who may be on the fence about Scalped, I've read issue one and I've seen art for issue two. It's going to be a very cool, hardcore series. The Rez is its own microcosm world filled to the brim in shit. Check it out. So.
Well, that was nice, so I take back what I said.
You're like, oh, shit.
Can you edit that part out?
Yeah, all right, call John.
Hook's a very attractive man.
Well, before we wrap up here, I want to kind of go back to the beginning of your career. You had won a Marvel talent hunt, is that correct?
Yeah, this was a Marvel talent search that they did back in summer of 2001. They like part of it at the San Diego Con and part at the Wizard World Chicago, which they picked like a writer and artist at each convention. And the Chicago one was for Wolverine. You had to submit a Wolverine idea. So I just typed up my little one page and dropped it in a box at the convention and kind of forgot about it. And it was like 4 or 5 months later when I got I was at work. I was working, you know, a crummy job at a video store, and I had a message on my phone, like, say, hey, this is, you know, such and such and such from Marvel Comics. Give me a call. My first thought was like, wow, this fucking crook this guy called me just to tell me that I lost.
Yeah.
What an ass.
That is story. We already did that origin story with Sabretooth.
So, yeah, I got to write an 8-page Wolverine story that was in Wolverine 175, right. You know, which was obviously didn't lead to anything else at the time, but it just encouraged me to keep pitching things and, you know, plugging away and gave me the faith that I could actually, you know, get some more gigs doing writing comics.
Do you think that helped with the pitch for the other side, or do you think, you know, they operate independently? I mean, did you mention whenever you pitched it, it's like, hey, I won the talent search, by the way, hire me? Or did that have anything to do with it?
I think I did. Maybe it did, and that, you know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it made me seem like a professional, even though I'd only been paid to write 8 pages.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of an influence that had or not.
Don't ever question it. Never question why you got the job. Never think about it too hard.
So were there anything in between then and the other side that you pitched that you think we'll ever see? Or is there anything in there that you know, you know, you look back on now and go, no, that wasn't a good idea?
There was a lot of stuff that I pitched along the way. I remember I pitched a Punisher story that was like his origin in Vietnam, right? You know, around the same time that Garth Ennis was working on Born.
Wow, and they went with Ennis instead of you? I can't believe
that.
No,
I was shocked.
How did you like Born?
I like that. I love Garth Ennis. I'm a big Garth Ennis fan. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I sent the pitch for the other side to Will Dennis, is because he had worked on those war story books that Ennis did for Vertigo.
Well, you're working on a war book. And then you've got a kind of a different look at a organized crime Indian reservation book. I don't know what genre that fits in.
That old cliche again. Another Indian reservation book. Jesus Christ! Yeah. It's the 90s all over again.
Even though the other side, I don't even know if I would categorize the other side as just a straight war book, because I mean it's almost a horror book.
Well,
it's, you know.
You know, I want to say because I haven't said this yet, but when this book first came out, The Other Side, I had absolutely no interest in it whatsoever, because I know it's horrible to say, but
I've heard this from editors before.
I don't know if it was just because, you know, I've watched so many movies about Vietnam and read stuff on Vietnam. I I'm not a real big war book comic book reader anyway, so I just didn't really think it would be something I liked. But Tom liked it so much that I had to pick it up, and I'm really glad I did. So I just want to say, for anyone out there that maybe had the same feelings I did, where it's like, I'm not interested in war books. The Other Side is not just a war book. It's much more than that, and I really enjoyed it. So I just wanted to get that out there, at least, and for my own.
And you know. I'm not full of shit.
Yeah, and Tom's not. Yeah.
This is all Tom's fault, because Tom turned both of us onto it.
Way to go, Tom.
Well, thank you. See, look at what I add.
Tom doesn't just show up.
Every week it's an interview for my job. Every week. I got to earn it.
Well, Jason, is there besides, it sounds like you're plenty busy with Scalp, but are there any other projects that are coming out that you're ready to talk about, or is that still in the distant future?
Nothing I can talk about yet, but yeah, the other side has opened a lot of doors for me, and I have a lot of stuff in the works for the next year. Some of it I'm already signed to do, some of it's still kind of in the talking stage, and I'm really excited. It's going to be a real diversity of genres. I think by the end of next year, I will have covered, you know, a wide range of genres for a wide range of companies.
Haunted
so
Tank.
Pretty excited about that.
Any plans to revisit Wolverine?
I would love to.
Could you write a Haunted Tank story?
Tom loves Haunted Tank.
I want Haunted Tank back. I'm sorry, I'm lame.
Tony Moore is a huge Haunted Tank fan. So
that's right, he is.
If I wanted to write it, I know he would love to draw it.
We'll have to work on Tony. Hey, Scalp's an ongoing, correct? That's not a mini series.
No, yes, It is an ongoing.
Okay, yeah. Congratulations. You know, cool. Jason, it's you know, more than anything, it's nice to hear a nice guy getting some work, because we had met you back at Wizard World
Chicago.
Well,
it's not fucking charity.
No, I mean, no,
it's really
no,
nice.
It's a nice story.
You've done so much with what God gave you.
Yeah. He's also a pretty talented writer.
Yeah,
so.
But, you know, we love the book, but, I mean, you know, that's when I was asking the question, is there anything coming up? I didn't want to say, well, so after Scalped, are you out of work? So, you know, it's nice to hear that you've got some stuff coming
up. Well, no,
up.
I had read, I did obviously a lot of research trying to learn more about you, but I had read you had penned like 30 issues of that already. You sort of have plotted out of Scalped.
Jesus.
Yeah, I turned in a summary. I think that went up to, to like 26 or 30. So those are all mapped out. And we're pretty far ahead on the book, too, because, we've been working on it for a while, but Vertigo wanted us to wait so that they could bring out the other side first. So, you know, Gera, the artist, just finished up issue number 6.
Wow.
Cool. Wow. And well, just come out with the trade. I mean, come on.
It'll ship on time. And well, the first issue comes out the first week of January, along with the other side, number 4.
Oh, great.
It's going to be Jason week, Jason Aaron week.
Jason Aaron week.
That's right. I think it's been officially renamed, but I'm not
sure. Jason all the time. All right, well, Jason, thank you so much. Look forward to everything else that is going to be coming out from you here in the near future and hopefully distant future as well. So you have a wonderful evening, and thanks for being on Around Comics.
Thanks, guys. You guys have a great holiday.
All right, and we'd like to thank Jason Aaron for spending some time with us this evening. You guys, really enjoying his work on the other side. Can't wait to read Scalped.
Yeah, I mean, Other Side is one of those books that I really hope people pick up, because I think it's sort of under the radar and it deserves a bigger audience, you know.
Buy a trade.
I think it'll hit the trade market very well. I don't know if this is one that you want to run up and hand a Vietnam veteran, because it's intense, it is an intense book.
I don't suggest giving gifts to any veteran. No, God, oh, Jesus Christ.
I'll hate mail to Tom at AroundComics.com.
They're angry.
No, I mean, it is a dark, grim book. It's entertaining, but, I mean, it's not a feel-good book.
It was a dark, grim war.
Yeah. You guys have just seen the look on South.
All wars are dark and grim except World War II.
Which was happy?
Which was, well, was good.
Come on, Doughboys.
It was the war, the end all wars.
All
that
jazz.
World War One.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. It was so good they had a sequel.
I thought that was World War II.
No, World War One was the one that war to end all wars. And
what was World War II?
World War II was them
the big one.
Thinking, oh shit, we didn't end anything.
Didn't we just fight one of these 20 years ago?
They're all standing around.
20 years ago. All right, so if you haven't checked out The Other Side, please do it. It is currently on issue 3 that shipped last week. So run into your old comic shop and see if you can scoop those up.
And thanks again to Jason Aaron for being on the show. And once you read The Other Side, why don't you leave us a voicemail at 1-888-65-GCAST and let us know what you think about it, just like Vince B.
Hey, guys. Vince
Hello.
B. Dave Cockrum's recent death made me realize something inherently wrong with the comic book industry. I mean, here you have a guy who had a struggle during his final days just to find health care and, you know, keep himself alive, when he was pretty much responsible for creating one of Marvel's biggest selling books of all time, a book that got them through a lot of lean years in the 90s, and they could have turned around and returned the favor to Cockrum during his lean years, but I think their little gift to him towards the end was a little bit too little, a little too late, you know? I think it's time the industry stopped treating creators like freelancers and started to give credit and money where it's due and start looking at these people like partners and employees, and that means full health benefits, because, you know, when you are part of the team that created Uncanny X-Men, like I said, an extremely profitable book for Marvel, and your final years are spent trying to find a couple of bucks to pay for your health care, there's just something that's not right about that. So, I miss Dave Cockrum. I loved his work. And I think it's time we look at this situation. And, I mean, actor and groups like that, it's not enough. And they shouldn't exist in the first place. Publishers should treat creators with the respect they deserve and, share the profits. Because if it weren't for the creators, they wouldn't have anything to profit from. So let's get moving on this, guys. Not you, but,
We're working on it.
I feel very bad.
Jesus.
It was Cockrum. Come on, the guy was one of the best of all time. And I remember running into him at a convention in the early to mid-80s where he was selling off samples he got from working with Mego and Aurora. And I can only wonder why an artist of his caliber and his renown would have to sell off these little dolls, to make money. But that's the way the industry works, and it's a crime. It's a shame. So that's all I had to say. Keep up the great work, guys. Love the show. And, let's hear it for Dave Cockrum.
Yeah. Well, certainly, Dave Cockrum's, another artist in a long list of them that unfortunately were never properly compensated for their creations. But, I think today the industry is a heck of a lot better.
Sure, you're starting to see a move where guys are signing, these exclusive deals.
You certainly still have...
Benefits are a huge part of that.
You still have freelancers that are out there mm-hmm. that don't have that kind of thing, and but at some point, you can only expect... like Marvel to DC to pay so much for past travesties. It's not Joe Quesada's fault that Dave Cockrum,
wasn't
compensated properly. And Marvel tried to help him out at some point and whatever it was, I don't know. But, things are better, I think, than they've ever been for artists, comic book artists and writers. And there's probably still some work to be done, but as far as Dave Cockrum, certainly a legendary artist that deserves all the respect in this industry that he gets, and even more than he gets probably. But
sure. And that was Vince B. By the way, if you haven't checked out Bullpen Bulletins, please do so. Vince and David Price do a fantastic podcast, and
it's usually not like that.
It's
serious.
Not as somber as that. It's usually
more upbeat.
But Vince knows his stuff, and he knows.
Well, and Vince has a huge appreciation for artists and
almost
and comics
of
of that era. So it's something
almost Vince.
It's something
good,
very.
I hope you don't ever prove me wrong.
It's something very serious to him, and it should be. So.
All right. Well, anyway, the hotline is a great way to interact with the show, and another great way to interact with Around Comics is our Frapper Map.
The Frapper Mappers. We'd only had three Frapper Mappers this week. Chad Enright from Hermanston, Oregon. He didn't say anything.
Flag Waver
from Louisville, Kentucky. He didn't say anything.
Also silent. And this is the funniest... fake internet name I've ever seen.
Hank Nazarbek.
Hank Nazarbek. Is that like a...
No, Hank, that's a real... Hank's actually sent us some emails. Hank wants to come on the show and he just wants to come here and hang out and stuff. So,
I now look like a dick.
He's a 15, nice job, Tom. He's a 15-year-old comic book fan, and he wants to just come and check us out and be on the show. So, and we're going to certainly have that happen. In fact, I think Chris is working on maybe
we've got a show idea, with Hank.
With Hank
and another one and another, of our listeners.
Another so young listener.
Chris is working on some way to get a 15-year-old from
I'm plotting. I just have to talk to my
makeup ready and my candy.
I just have to talk to my parole officer and we're all set.
Those are our frappers.
All right, guys. After you join the Frapper Map and leave a hotline message, you can help spread the Around Comics love by taking part of our listener LCS challenge. If you go to www.aroundcomics.com, you can download the flyer, ask your local comic shop owner or manager
who has answered the challenge.
Nova Comics in Virginia, BuyMeToys.com in Indiana, Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy in Austin, Texas, The Source Comics and Games in Falcon Heights, Minnesota, and California Cards and Games in Elk Grove, California.
Nice.
And you can see on the site when you go to the section of the Spread the Love or the LCS Challenge, you can see those shops' addresses.
They're all linked
and phone
there.
Numbers
yeah.
and
all that good stuff. So. All right, Podcast Alley, drop us a vote if you can. And iTunes Music Reviews, please be as cool as Andy Parks and Scott Johnson and 70-odd other people. And we appreciate those votes at the iTunes Music Store. Wrap things up here. I want to let everyone know that we are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. The CPN is a collection of some of the best comic book podcasts on the net. You can learn more about the network and find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com. The forum, you guys did a great job asking some questions for Jason this week. Some great threads and comments out there. So we always enjoy your involvement there. Just so everyone is aware, we post next week's topic on Tuesdays or thereabout at the forum at AroundComics.com. Would like to thank the New York Comic Con for sponsoring this episode. Sal, Tom, as always, it's a great time. Everyone have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back again next Monday with another new episode. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in
and around comics. Tuesday and Wednesday.
Thursday, Monday.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same, bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2006. All rights reserved. Love your baby. Yeah.